Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the A10 Talk podcast. Sam Basil joined alongside Kaylee Godek and Thomas Aiello. We are 2 weeks into the 2023-24 Atlantic 10 season. Well, the college basketball season. We haven't started conference play. But all 15 of our A10 teams on the men's side and the women's side, you know, we're 2 weeks in. Everyone's probably played about 4 or 5 games at this point. We're in full swing with MTEs, you know, some pre-Thanksgiving tournaments, some tournaments heading into Thanksgiving break. And overall, this is shaping up to be a really interesting start to conference play. And I say interesting because there's a lot of good stuff and there's a lot of not so great stuff. So guys, just starting off, I would love to know how you're doing. And if you could you both give me one word to describe your outlook on the conference so far? Right now on the men's side, just on the men's side. KG, what you got?
I think it's said every year, our conference is definitely chaotic. You never know what's going to happen next with the A10 on both sides. So really on the men's side, you can already say it's chaos just based off of Dayton's win over St. John's this past Friday.
Excellent. Yeah, chaotic is definitely one that I was thinking of before I went with what I ended up going with. But Aiello, what you got for us?
Oh man, I don't even know. Let's go. Okay, let's go with an old school A10 term. Well, old school ish. Havoc. How about that for the men's side? Havoc. Anyone remember Havoc from VCU? Long time ago. Yeah, the men's side is Havoc. As Tony Patelis would say, shout out to that guy on Twitter, the A10 is a corpse or it stinks in all caps. So there's a couple different words, but I went with Havoc because the throwback A10 terms are funny to me. And the men's side has, for the most part, been a letdown between a lot of our teams. The only team that's really putting anything together for an at-large bid, and as of right now, if you were to pick a champion, it is probably Dayton. And if Dayton wins the A10, we're back to the one bid league, the A10's a joke discussion, and Dayton's the only team that's put an at-large resume together because they beat St. John's, they beat these guys, they beat LSU. It's been a havoc time to start the Atlantic 10 men's side.
I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit here. I know there have been some tough losses. There were some tough losses tonight. But so far in these 2 weeks, I've been kind of impressed. That's my word. I'm going with impressed. You know, so far in these MTEs, I feel like a couple A10 teams have racked up some pretty interesting wins. The most notable, I think, we'll get into being Dayton versus St. John's. They're obviously going up against, as we speak, probably, you know, they're going to start while we're in the midst of recording this as of Sunday night. They're going to tip off in the championship game of the Charleston Classic against number 6 Houston. And then outside of that, we've got two, as of Sunday night, undefeated teams in the A10 right now, that being LaSalle and George Washington. I know their schedules haven't been too tough, but, you know, it's still nice to be 3-0, 4-0. And then we've also got only two teams outside of the top 200 in the KenPom ratings right now. So I think right now, I'm impressed. I think there are a lot of ways that, you know, there are still a lot of tests that the A10 needs to pass for us to be really confident in them in being a multi-bid league this year. But I also think they have set a pretty decent baseline for themselves in the grand scheme of things to be a successful conference in 2023-24. So let's get into it. Let's get into maybe what we've been impressed with, what we might, you know, have kind of been disappointed about. And let's start off with, you know, just the MTE breakdowns, right? We've got a lot of teams in action this weekend, in action as we speak. You know, just for a quick little score check right now, St. Louis is playing Wichita State. It's about halfway through the first half right now. They're down 23-14 in the Myrtle Beach Invitational. Washington State took down Rhode Island today at the Basketball Hall of Fame tip-off at Mohegan Sun. They Washington won that one 78-57. Charlotte ended George Mason's undefeated streak with a 54-49 win in the Jacksonville Classic. And then Fordham, right before we started recording this podcast, lost to Abilene Christian in the Paradise Jam semifinals, 59-45. And as I mentioned before, obviously, in a couple minutes, Dayton is taking on number 6 Houston in the championship game of the Charleston Classic. So taking that roster of teams and MTEs right now, you know, a good mix of Power 5 opponents, some quality mid-major opponents. How would you evaluate the Atlantic 10's performance this weekend? Thomas, what do you think?
I feel like with the word impressive, to go back to that point, in the years, the past couple of years, the bar's been so low. I think we're much better with the start that the conference has had, but it's not to say that we're back to 3 bids, 2 bids outright. I don't think we're there yet, right? And on Friday, I mean, I look at some of these scores. St. Joseph's lost to a knockoff Texas A&M school. I have never heard of the school that they played. They lost by 3 to them. I believe the game was at Hawk Hill, or it could have been, it was at Hawk Hill? It was, okay. So I don't even know what to say, because I was watching some of the St. Joe's fans on Twitter reacting to that game, and they said, oh, this guy got a tech. We went cold here. Why is this guy shooting threes? Why isn't this guy taking it to the basket? What the hell is Billy Lang doing? All the same complaints that Joe's fans would have. That's just sort of telling of what we've seen so far, especially in the MTE time, right? I know LaSalle's 4-0, but they haven't exactly played anyone that's eye-popping to you. I guess Drexel would be the only logical team that you could put as a quality team that LaSalle has beaten of the 4 games that they've won. Davidson losing to ETSU, I don't think that was a game that I thought they were going to win, but I didn't think they would win it by like 20, right? They wouldn't lose it by, they wouldn't get blown out either, because I think Davidson's better than what we were advertised in the preseason. St. Louis losing to Vermont in a tough one. Again, that's one of those games where they could win, but they have more of a chance to lose, in my opinion. But the big headliner here for these MTEs, it's the Dayton Flyers taking down LSU in that crazy second half. They beat St. John's in a wild back and forth affair. And Deron Holmes playing point center. Can we give some love to the big fella for playing point center? I mean, that's impressive in and of itself, let alone beating St. John's. Anthony Grant's so confident in his team that he's going to let Deron Holmes run the offense. I mean, that to me is quite telling of where the Flyers are right now. But the game that really, and this is the one that I was screaming at my television for tonight, was the Fordham game. And they shot 1 of 12 against Abilene Christian from the 3-point line. They shot 12 of 21 from free throws. They turned the ball over 19 times. They got 17 offensive rebounds, but got 8 points off of that. And look, I know I hot taked it in the beginning of the year. I put Fordham first because I had no reason not to. I thought this conference was going to be horrible, and so far I'm kind of right. But they are in clearly some sort of retooling season that's coming. It'll be an achievement if they go 500, I think, at this point, if you're looking at tonight's results. And that's sort of rippling through the rest of the conference. I mean, Rhode Island losing to Washington State, who's not that good. You have George Mason losing a tough one to Charlotte, a one-time A-10 team. And St. Louis is finally playing a real team, in my opinion, Wichita State. And in all honesty, I think they're going to get their ass kicked by Wichita State. I think that they're a much better team than what people give them credit for. And again, it's only really Dayton. But the rest of these teams, if you're not playing a cupcake schedule, you're kind of getting smacked around. And I think that's the reality of what we're going to be seeing when we get to conference play.
Yeah, so in that game against St. John's that you mentioned, you know, talking about Deron Holmes playing point center, essentially. He had 21 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, an assist, and a steal. On defense, it looked like Dayton was really locking down Joel Soriano, who, you know, obviously is probably the best player on St. John's right now, former Fordham Ram. You're talking about teams, you know, scheduling kind of cupcake schedules, in your opinion. Do you feel like even if Dayton loses to Houston tonight, do you feel like the rest of their schedule is enough to kind of take that St. John's win and continue to, you know, carry that momentum into conference play. Obviously, you know, it goes without saying that the St. John's win also requires St. John's to stay a solid team for the rest of the season. But do you like the rest of Dayton's non-conference schedule heading out of the Charleston Classic?
I want to say that I do, and I believe that the Houston game is going to be one where Anthony Grant may have his team in over their heads a little bit, because Houston, they're a top 10 team. They've got LJ Cryer, Damian Dunn, Jamal Shedd's still there, Kelvin Sampson, who's taken them to a Final Four, who's taken them to an Elite Eight, who's taken them to the Sweet 16. He's got NBA pedigree. He's coached at big places. Like, the Houston machine is still very good. And I do think that if anyone in the Atlantic 10 can give them a game, it's the Flyers. That being said, Daron Holmes and Nate Santos, they need more than those two to beat Houston. I mean, we watched Temple last year beat them at Houston in what was truly a Herculean effort from Aaron McKee's group. And it was a totally different team from the Temple team that Adam Fisher has now. Aaron McKee's whole thing about him coaching, it was nothing like what we're seeing from someone like Adam Fisher, who's coming from a Micah Shrewsbury, a Jim Larrañaga, was with Jay Wright for a hot minute, right? He's got all these X's and O's, and McKee was just with Dunphy, and he's a school legend. That being said, though, Anthony Grant is a program legend at Dayton, and he's got a good system. It's just facing Houston is just a different beast than St. John's. And with St. John's, my dad is very adamant about Fordham beating St. John's at Madison Square Garden this year. I'm not saying they're going to do it. I don't believe that Fordham's ready for that. I'm not saying St. John's is this world-beating team either. But the St. John's game, I think, really showed that, A, Dayton is much better than we think they're going to be, because we were all, oh, my God, Tamani Kamara, Daron Holmes are the greatest front court in the Atlantic 10, like, ever. And now Tumani is a pro, and they bring in Nate Santos, and he's all of a sudden a much better fit next to Daron Holmes. They have much better guard play than they did a year ago. They're a little smaller, but they're still defensively annoying. They're physical. They're pesky. And in the middle, Daron Holmes is sending everything back. I mean, he's handing out refunds like it's nothing. And I do think that, again, if Dayton beats Houston, I mean, that's fantastic, but what do they really have to lose from playing Houston? They're kind of playing with house money right now, because their real problem is going to come in the Atlantic 10 schedule, because they haven't won the league since 2003. And the Dayton fans are not happy about it. They know they should win it every year. They are the best team if you want to look at talent and coaching, but they haven't done it yet. I think that's what they're more concerned about. So right now they're just kind of playing with house money.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, it's kind of the beauty, right, of being a mid-major team where, yes, I mean, Dayton fans are obviously looking for a win tonight. Dayton as a team themselves are looking for a win tonight. But like you said, I think what they have to lose here really does not outweigh what they have to gain. They could, and the beauty of college basketball and college sports in general is that, you know, until you get into conference play, sometimes your record is not really the end all be all of what speaks for the quality of your team, right? When, you know, we live in a world of the KenPom and, you know, the net ranking and the, you know, the AP top 25, you know, you could still come out of a loss looking good. So yeah, I'm sure at the very least Dayton fans are hoping that the Flyers just give Houston a game tonight. I know you mentioned LaSalle. You talked about how, you know, while they are 4-0, they haven't really played anybody that impressive. I mentioned that there are only two teams outside of the KenPom top 200 in the A-10 right now. LaSalle is one of those teams. They are 207th in KenPom right now. But you did text me, I believe it was yesterday, LaSalle is good.
Yeah, I did.
You felt like you were impressed with LaSalle. What about them so far has impressed you, aside from the fact that they're getting some wins against some not necessarily strong non-conference opponents?
I think the first thing that stands out to me, and I wrote this in my season preview, is Fran Dunphy really has turned the clock back. I mean, I feel like sometimes when I'm watching them and I hear POW just come out of the television, I feel like I'm watching KG is just because she knows that POW is a notorious A10 meme. When I hear POW reverberate through my living room watching LaSalle, I feel like I'm watching a Temple Owls game with like Deontay Christmas just bombing threes off of curl screens. Or I'm watching Shiz Alston hit a step back three in someone's face, right? Fran Dunphy has turned the clock back to his Temple Owl days, and he's reminded the Atlantic 10 he is a legend for a reason. And this guy last year took a somewhat barren LaSalle roster, and he went all the way to the quarterfinals with it. And now they lost the Drame twins. They lost Josh Nickelberry to Florida State, and they've got a bunch of foreign freshmen in. So you kind of wonder preseason, like how good are these kids? I know that the Killer Bees are still there, and Rokas Josias is still the big guy inside, but they have no one behind him. Deshaun Shepard can jump. That's about it. You look at all these things, and then Dunphy's like, I may be 75 or whatever he is. He can still develop talent. He has a good staff, and his strategies, they all still work, right? We watch people coming off of curl screens. They're going downhill. Jameer Brickus is head faking people to death. Then you've got people posting up at the elbow and drawing fouls. They're throwing threes up like it's nobody's business, protecting the ball. All these things that make Dunphy who he was and who he still is. But again, they're 4-0 against who? Who have they played that's impressive of the four teams? If by default, it's Drexel. That's the only team that I can point to is Drexel's not bad for what they're supposed to be. And in the Big Five, I know that there's six teams now, they could win their little pod. And LaSalle, they've impressed me with the player development that Dunphy's done, with Tunde Fasasi, who I think has really separated himself among the freshmen. I like Andreas Marrero as a three-point shooter. And of course, it starts and ends with the two killer bees, with Khalil Brantley and Jameer Brickus, and those two are obviously responsible for over like 70% of the scoring. Anwar Gill chips in, Deshaun Shepard chips in, Rokas Josias is the big guy inside who really has come alive in the first four games of his sophomore season. And the personnel preseason on paper, because I was really trying to find what can I say about this LaSalle team, is they're going to shoot threes and they're not going to be hesitant about it. And this is the type of personnel that Dunphy would have recruited 16 years ago when he was at North Broad Street, of a team that we're going to shoot threes, we're going to just play hard on defense, and we're going to protect the ball. The three things that Dunphy knows how to do and he's been doing for a gazillion years, they're doing. And this LaSalle team, really, on paper, again, it's not that good. But the fact that they can be a top eight team, it's very likely right now. Again, I know the schedule's soft, but they could be a top eight team. They really could be. I mean, they've got the dudes to do it, and Dunphy is still an excellent in-game coach.
Yeah, and that schedule, I would agree. It's cushy until Tuesday when LaSalle takes on the Duke Blue Devils.
In Durham.
What can you expect from the Explorers against Duke?
POW!
Could you imagine if... Wait, let's hold on. Can we imagine this for a second? Could you imagine if the LaSalle Explorers march into Cameron Indoor Stadium and beat the Duke Blue Devils? Do you know how many POWs there would be on everyone's Twitter feed? I mean, there'd be protest rank the Explorers. It would be that kind of like win for them. It would be.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't even think that would be that ridiculous. I mean, I feel like, say LaSalle comes in and beats Duke. I know it's, you know, it's a very slim chance, but you know, a 5-0 team that beats a top 10 team in the country, that gets you some AP votes. But again, let's dial it back a little bit. I'm saying right now, you know, in the same vein of us saying that at the very least, you know, Flyers fans want Dayton to give Houston at least a game tonight in the Charleston Classic. what would you want to see out of LaSalle, you know, X's and O's wise, or, you know, in the box score, that would leave you, even in a loss, saying, wow, that was an impressive performance from LaSalle against Duke? How can they stop them on a couple plays, you know, get past their defense in certain ways? How would you want LaSalle to do that?
I feel like the first thing you have to do is you absolutely have to bring your A game mentally. That's the first thing that you have to do. You have to protect that ball at all costs, right? It's like a running back in the NFL. They're running through the offensive line into the defensive line, and then you get to the linebackers. People are trying to strip the ball from you. There's hands smacking you. You're going to get tackled. You're going to get run over by a truck, right? Duke is going to try and do that to LaSalle, and the Explorers have to come in mentally as sharp as you can possibly be. I think the second thing is, if you want to play fast, you can't do it in long stretches like I know they want to, and I know that they've been playing, right? You almost have to pick your spots where you want to run, and that may only be three times the entire half. It could be that sort of transition game. And KG, you know all about this, being a UMass observer with Frank Martin, right? He always wants to play fast, but sometimes it just doesn't make sense to do it because it may not be the right move in that situation, and it may not be the right move against that type of opponent. I think that's what LaSalle is going to run into against Duke. Now, obviously, Duke is six times the size of the LaSalle Explorers, right? Kyle Filipowski is masquerading as a center, but he's really a 6'11 power forward. He doesn't play anything like a real center, in my opinion, for what you need in college basketball to win games. That being said, LaSalle has Rokas Josias, who is a stretch four masquerading, again, as a center. So this could be a game where Dunphy kind of flips the game plan inside out and upside down. There could be some creative moves from him, but I don't think that he's going to try and do anything that is going to really like F over the entire team, where they're going to just be down 20 in the first 5 minutes. I don't think he's going to try and implement anything where that could happen, but he's going to have to get very creative in ways that we don't normally see Fran Dunphy sort of strategize for a game, because it's Duke. This is one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I will definitely be tuning in to watch that one, but, you know, we're going to get into, you know, games later on in the week, a little bit later in the pod. So a great summary of what LaSalle's been up to and why you kind of like them. But KG, I want to talk to you real quick about the UMass Minutemen. Obviously they got up to a solid 2-0 start, with wins against Albany, wins against Quinnipiac, but then they dropped one at home in overtime to Harvard by 3 points. Could you talk about what went wrong in overtime in that game, and, you know, where you see UMass right now and where they can go from here?
Yeah, so one thing I will just say, UMass currently sits in the KenPom at 173. So they moved up from being, I think it was 199. So that is a huge thing to see, that they're moving up in the KenPom. This loss against Harvard isn't really bad, actually. Like, Martin wasn't very upset, surprisingly, which amazes me. He was not really upset. What really went wrong for the Minutemen was they shot 10 from 25 from the free throw line, could not make their free throws for the life of them for some reason, and they went 7 from 28 from the three-point line. So this is a team that is known for trying to shoot those three-pointers and tries to go for the driving lanes when they can. And they really did really good at that. It's just Harvard was able to claw their way back in with Malik Mack, their star point guard freshman. May I just point out, a freshman scoring 32 points. The Minutemen could not guard them for the life of them. And UMass had the chance to force the second overtime, but unfortunately were not able to do it. But it was probably like one of the best like atmospheres I had felt in the Mullen Center since, the Chaz Williams era. Going back to basically a decade ago now at this point, we had our highest attended game this past Friday for UMass so far this season at 3,735 people there. The student section was a little more bigger than typical just because it was also Greek life night. So they were trying to get all of like the students that are involved in Greek life to come. And they did show up. And it's just, it felt like that atmosphere that you hadn't felt before. Granted, not a sellout crowd like Mullen Center, but like a not like a crowd that was enthusiastic and was willing to be there. And Martin mentioned in the post-game press conference, yes, this is the crowd that we've been wanting to like have, like that really want to get into the game and want to give us energy so we can feed off of. It's just we let them down tonight. They really didn't let them down, though. Like, they played through hard and throughout, like, through the entirety of the game. I think maybe the one problem we had was just getting shots to fall. Again,
yeah,
7 from 28 from the three-point line is what really killed them. I feel like if a few more of those went down and the three throws went down, we wouldn't have even seen overtime.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, UMass right now in the KenPom is 173. And I want to point out, you know, we're it's kind of tough when you're recording a podcast while, you know, a lot of games are in progress or, you know, stuff is continuously updating. There are now three teams outside the KenPom 200. Rhode Island, which was already there at 204, LaSalle at 207, and then Fordham, after this loss to Abilene Christian, is now at 205. So, Tom, I know you were talking about it. We've been texting back and forth for this entire game. I know we already mentioned it leading into it, but you kind of want to break down where you see Fordham right now at this point in the season. 2-2 wins against Wagner, and then Norfolk State in the opening round of the Paradise Jam, and then they had a loss last week to Cornell, and then they obviously lost tonight to Abilene Christian, and they're going to be playing in the third place game in the Paradise Jam tomorrow. Depending on, you know, they're going to be playing the loser of Kent State and Missouri State. So, what have you seen from the Fordham Rams so far? What have you liked? What have you not liked from them? And what can they do in this game tomorrow to get to 3-2?
I think the first thing that has stood out to me is, number one, is Abdu Simbila is Fordham's Rudy Gobert. And what I mean by that is when he's not on the floor defensively, they can suffer. They really can suffer defensively. In the paint, he's a ginormous human being for 6'9", whatever, 240-plus pounds or whatever the heck that he is. He's got incredible strength when going up to finish for layups. He's very hard to like push around. I know that Daron Holmes makes everybody look like a 5'9 human being like I am, but there are very few people who could hang with someone like him, and Simbila is one of those guys, right? Defensively, Fordham, especially when Simbila is on the floor, they're still good. Their fundamentals in terms of boxing out, getting contests to shooters, and some of the game planning about leaving guys open. It makes sense when you leave guys open if they're not good three-point shooters, but when you're doubling the ball handler off of the pick and fade and then the other guy's just wide open and no one's rotating, you know, that's obviously concerning to see from my vantage point. Offensively, they are lost offensively. I mean, they really are. Right now, it was a struggle tonight against Abilene Christian. They hit 1-3 on 12 attempts. They missed. They went 12 of 21 from free throw land. Four in a row were coming from one guy, and that was Antrell Charlton, who drew a flagrant one, missed both of those free throws, and then drew another foul off of an offensive rebound and then missed those free throws. So it's almost a technological struggle for Fordham offensively. A lot of people are saying that they didn't do a good job replacing Quisenberry and Khalid Moore. They want to develop their in-house talent. That's why they were so keen on giving their sophomore class all these reps and all these minutes. But it's almost as if it's hindered by pulling guys like Will Richardson tonight. He drew a foul, hit both of his free throws, and then came down before that, or it was after that, and hit a layup. And then Ergo pulled him for whatever reason, and he sat him for a couple minutes, and then he came back in, and then he was cold the rest of the game. You almost have to shorten up the rotation. And Fordham right now, their half-court offense, it's really it's hard to watch. And I think that there's a lot of things that this group is trying to figure out about itself. I think they're trying to establish an identity on that end. They're still trying to establish leaders on that end. And I think they're having a rough time doing it at the moment. I've been a vocal advocate to play 40-minute pressure defense, just like VCU used to do, right? You rarely saw them run half-court sets. They would just run up and down the floor in transition. They had the athletes to do it, and that's how they would beat teams. And, of course, their in-your-face defense was how they would generate a lot of stops. That's how they would keep teams from scoring. And you could rely on that and just figure it out on the offensive side. And I feel like that's the way that Fordham's going to have to go, as well as you can't develop guys and try to win games. It's you got to pick one or the other. And I know that, again, I put Fordham at the top of my power rankings this year. I tried to construct an argument for it, but I'm starting to fear that this is going to be some sort of retooling season for them. And then there could be, depending on how the season goes, there could be a lot of changes by the time we get to April in terms of the personnel of players. I think that, you know, you can't panic now, but you definitely are waving the yellow flag at minimum with this Fordham team.
Yeah, I think that last statement that you about that last sentence is really important, right? Like you can't panic now because it's four games in. They've played four games, right? And in the two wins that they've had, I felt like, you know, in a lot of the areas that you talked about that they excelled at, they're doing really well. You know, I know you're saying that, you know it's tough to develop guys and win games at the same time. And while I agree, I think Urgo has done a good job at, you know, getting a lot of bodies out like early in a game. I feel like by the first, like, or maybe by the second media timeout in a lot of games, Fordham has already had like 11, 12 guys hit the floor. I think that can really work to Fordham's advantage. I think I could almost see them kind of working on sort of like a hockey lines kind of way of rolling guys out, you know, like a first line, second line. And I just don't think they necessarily have those set in stone yet because, again, they've played four games. But, yeah, I think the focus – I mean, if, you know, just in my opinion, the focus should definitely be let's get those that sophomore class out there, right? I think those guys, there is some really strong talent in that class. I mean, we saw, right, in the opening game, Elijah Gray, you know, he had his career high. Career high scoring in that game. And then he started the second game because Abdu was out because of a minor ankle injury. He had tweaked it earlier in practice. But they just got to, you know, do a couple things. They got to, you know, I think they got to be a bit more, you know, confident in some of their shot selections. It seems like they like to play really fast. And that's not something that's very surprising. It's what we've seen out of these Fordham teams before. But I think I would like to see them be a bit more efficient off something like, you know, like the pick and roll. They got to capitalize on their offensive rebounds. They did really great. They've done really good these last two games on the offensive glass, but their second chance points just have not been there. And I think what happens is, I mean, this team's really physical and they're going for the putback. I think sometimes they got to rely more on the kick out. You know what I mean? They got to kick out to the arc on an offensive rebound. But, yeah, overall, as long as they can do that and obviously stop the turnovers, just be a bit better in transition, I think we'll see a lot more consistent Fordham team, especially with that sophomore class.
I think the quick counterpoint to kicking out for threes is they haven't particularly shot the ball well.
I'm not even saying kick out and shoot a three. I'm saying kick out, reset, you know, survey the court and then find the best play possible. Okay. I'm not saying kick out for three because I think a lot of teams can benefit from that around the country, right? I think a lot of teams want to play really fast, but sometimes, you know, I think a lot of teams should adopt a bit more like methodical way of doing things. Kick out and either shoot three if you've got it, if it's open, or just set a pick and find the open lane. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I have no counters to that if that's the case. But I feel like, again, they want to play fast, but it's almost as if it's a little out of control. there needs to be a controlled aggression. You mentioned the shot selection. They got to stop tonight, one of the possessions, and Will Richardson jacks up a contested three like right away. He's about 4 feet behind the arc. That's not his game, and we know that Will is a much better player than that. Like, you can't settle for jump shots being down whatever they were, 19-7 early on, and that happened early in the game, and other things too. Like, you can't have Simbila get a steal and then he dribbles it and he just loses the ball. You got to tell him to pick it up and wait for someone to come take it. It's these little things that are killing this Fordham team right now, and they sound easy to correct. And in theory, most of these things are, right? Like boxing out on the defensive end to grab your rebounds, right? There was one possession they gave up, I think, 4 offensive rebounds in a row. Other things like getting out and rotating to the open shooter and contesting, playing with a controlled tempo on the offensive end. It's all, again, free throws, right? It's all these things that sound so simple, and you would think in theory they're easy to correct. And most cases you'd be right, but things like free throws and shooting, they take so much time to hammer down because there's a certain way you got to go about it. There's a certain way you have to generate your looks. And Fordham's offense, when I watch it sometimes, like, why is Abdu Simbila at the top of the key? Why isn't he just running around setting screens and rolling to the basket? Why aren't you spacing the floor with guys that will run a pick and roll with Simbila? He gets a lob, or if you draw enough of the defense, you can kick out to the open guy. You can do a ball reversal. And then if you want to chuck a three, chuck a three, or chuck whatever's available. If you can drive, all these different things you can do. And it's basic stuff, but that could really be like the stuff that they should run and they could be good at. I don't think trying to run this complex system, and this just goes for anybody, right, that has a young team. KG, you guys have this up at UMass with 6 freshmen right now. Trying to run these complex sets offensively, one, you have to have a certain type of smart player to run in these complex sets, because if the play breaks down, that player should know what to do. I think the second thing is, if you're trying to give the young guys so many things they got to think about, once you start thinking when you're playing a sport, you're done. You're just mentally checked out, because if you're thinking what you're going to do, you're cooked. And I'm sorry, I don't care how talented you are, you're not going to win and you're not going to play well. It's just a little bit of a ramble here from my end, but these things are just so basic they can fix. And it's almost as if they keep banging their head into the wall thinking that it's going to fall down, but instead they're just hurting themselves, right? They're so hung up on last year a little bit maybe, and the success that they had, and thinking the things that we did last year, why won't they work this year? Well, you don't have Darius Quisenberry. You don't have Khalid Moore, who's dynamic as all hell. You don't have Rostik Nowitzki, who just basically stood in the paint and was taller than everybody and just reached up and threw the ball in the basket. You don't have those guys that could lead your team from a talent standpoint and a playing standpoint, but also from a mental standpoint. Because you remember, Sam, how calm Khalid Moore was? Like, even when you would just talk to the kid, he was so mellow. He wouldn't get all jumpy or get all colorful right away. Darius Quisenberry was a little bit more, you know, out there in terms of how he led. He's very emotional, and I think that he played with a lot of passion. Khalid Moore was almost like a robot. He didn't say much. He didn't say much. He didn't show too much emotion, but in a way, that's kind of how you have to play. And I think this Fordham team, it's kind of working against them right now.
Yeah, no, I think you make some fantastic points. And I think the best thing this team has that can, you know, help them figure that out is time. I think tomorrow, I think whatever opponent they'll have is probably going to be favorable. I think a win, if Kent State ends up losing this game, I know it's like, I know I'm saying this, but it's a team that'll be coming off a loss. I think Kent State would be a much favorable matchup for Fordham. I think that'd be a much tougher test than Missouri State right now. It'd be great to see Fordham get a win against a MAC team, which, you know, tends to be a pretty tough conference, you know, comparably with the Atlantic 10. And then they've got, you know, a game against Manhattan at home and a game against Fairleigh Dickinson at home. And I know this is a very different Fairleigh Dickinson team than, you know, the one that beat Purdue in the tournament last year. But I think it'll be two solid tests for Fordham, two very winnable games. And again, two games that give them plenty of time to actually figure out, you know, what they want to be doing. The next team I want to talk about before we get into the women's side of things is Duquesne. Duquesne obviously was on top of our A-10 rankings. Duquesne was on top of our A-10 talk power rankings this past week. They are up until today, they were the number one team in KenPom. They're now right behind Dayton, right outside the top 100. And they're 4-1. Again, like we've been saying, their schedule hasn't been super crazy. Wins against Cleveland State, Charleston, Stony Brook, and Ryder, and then obviously a 3-point loss to Princeton at home. What do you like out of this team? Where do you see them going, and how do you see them, you know, where do you see them standing in the Atlantic 10 come conference play?
I feel that they could possibly be a conference title contender this year. I mean, I wouldn't be saying this 2 or 3 years ago where they only beat UMass the entirety of that conference play. But I feel like they could be a good title contender just based off of some of these games that they've produced. Granted, that one loss to Princeton, that's not a bad loss. Like, Princeton did come off of a good NCAA tournament run last year, being a 15 seed, being a two seed. I don't remember who they beat. And then making it on to the second round. You don't see that often from your 16, 15 seed. So I wouldn't say that's a horrible loss. It was a nail biter. Other than that, I feel like Keith Danbrot has a really good squad down in Pittsburgh.
I think the one concern that I have with the Dukes is the health of their big guys. Trey Williams already went down. We don't know how long he's going to be out. I at least haven't looked up how long he's going to be out. Dusan Mohorovic, who was their big-time transfer coming in from NC State, he was at Utah State, I believe, before that. So he's been to the Power Five, and he's also experienced the lowest of lows with back-to-back lower body injuries. And he's still recovering from the one that he had last season. So I know that Duquesne's good, and I think that they can at least get to the semifinals of A-10s. They've got, what, 8 seniors on the team at least? They have to go for it at this point. You've got the Drame twins, you got Mohorovic, you got Sarasov, Day-Day Grant still there, Jimmy Clark is still there. You got all these guys, Kareem Rozier, who looks like a much better player than he did last year. They shoot the three well. They're a great offensive team. Defensively, they can be hit or miss. Most of the time, they're kind of in the middle. It's just going to come down to if your big guys are healthy, because you're going to need those bodies when you get to the A-10s. You got quite a conference of big guys this year, right? Josh Cohen at UMass, Deron Holmes, Neil Quinn is a freaking monster right now at Richmond. You've got Amari Kelly at George Mason. You've got this one and that one, and this guy at this school. LaSalle's got Josius, and then Rhode Island's got Jeremy Formena and all these other dudes. So there's a lineup of centers in this conference that are very good. So you're going to need the big bodies down there. If you don't have the big body down there, I don't care how many threes you hit. If you can't rebound the ball at the end of the day, I'm sorry, you're just not going to win games. But I do think, to go back to KG's point, is that this Duquesne team, this is the best Duquesne team I think that they've had under Keith Danbrot. I don't think it's close in terms of talent. And this could be the best A-10 team that they've had in the last, since the turn of the century, honestly, because they were the first conference champion, and that's their only A-10 title. They haven't won it since. This could be their team to break that streak of we haven't won the conference since 1977, and they've got a really good team to do it. They've got an incredible strategy. Danbrot's a good coach. It's just going to come down to if your big guys are healthy and if they can go out there and slow down those big centers that I named that the A-10's got.
Yeah, and that concept, right, being, you know, not necessarily that it's now or never, but kind of coming to the realization that wow, this is the team that we've been waiting for a long time to have that run. Is is a great feeling. Don't get me wrong. It's a great feeling for any fan base or any team to feel like that. But it's really tough when you have that, and also at the same time you've got a team in your conference where, you know, like Dayton, where they do have NBA caliber talent, right? So it's one of those things where it's an ugly reminder in sports that just because they're your favorite team does not mean they're the main character in this story. I feel like we see that a lot in like college football, right? You look at a school like
Colorado, like this, perfect example.
Yeah, Colorado. Well, I'm even talking about like you look at a school like Penn State, right? In the Big Ten, look how well they're doing right now. How well they've done in these past couple of years, or even Iowa. And the entire time, it's like, wow, these are some of the best teams we've fielded in years, but they're just playing second fiddle to Michigan, Ohio State, who are just that on that much of another level. I'm not saying that the jump from Duquesne to Dayton is the jump from an Iowa football to an Ohio State football, but I'm just saying like it's tough when you think you've done everything you can and there's still that roadblock. So for you, I mean, how do you see Duquesne getting past that roadblock this year? Because again, look, we talked about it. Dayton has you know, in a lot of years, a lot of recent years, they've fielded the preseason favorite to win the conference, and they haven't capitalized on that since 2003. So it's obviously not out of the picture. So if Duquesne does it, how does that happen?
Well, let's give a shout out to Oliver Purnell, who was the last Flyer coach to win the conference tournament. Let's give him his props, because I don't know if there's any school, I mean, besides Duquesne, that has had this sort of debacle that Dayton's had, where they've been so freaking talented and they can't win the damn conference. I mean, it's impressive almost in a way. But I think for Duquesne, this is going to kind of sound ridiculous, but you have to hope you don't run into Dayton. You have to kind of hope that they implode, that they Daron Holmes, you know, he'll play great. Like, he's going to play great every game. But you have to hope that, like, Nate Santos goes cold one game, or, like, almost hope that they're kind of beat up, because Dayton's had a history of injuries the last couple of years under Anthony Grant. And it's through no fault of his own. It's just the luck that they've had. So it's almost as if you have to hope that their team is injured in a way. And that can sound really cruel, and I don't wish injury on anybody, but things just kind of have to roll Duquesne's way. And they're also lucky too that Virginia Commonwealth and St. Louis, once we hit A-10 play, and this is more applicant towards VCU than it is to St. Louis, they stink. Both of those teams are going to stink. They are not the same teams as they were last season. St. Louis lost perhaps the greatest 4-5-man class that they've had in the Atlantic 10, going back to the Jim Crew teams that would just destroy you defensively. And VCU completely flipped the program over. Not that we didn't expect them to not be like good. A lot of people had them in like the 4-6 range. We didn't expect them to be this horrible of a team. Like, there's no they don't stop people on defense at all. People just walk to the rim. They don't get out and contest shots. Offensively, you know, they're shooting their threes. Max Shulga is awesome. I love watching Shulgi play. That's his new nickname, by the way. We're going to call him Shulgi, as I got nothing else for you. But he's awesome. And the rest of the team, it's strange. I know they beat Seattle U, but it took them a really close game. And I believe it was like a 4-point win for them to do it. And they ended up winning the game. But again, they're just, those two teams are not good this year. St. Bonaventure, we all thought that they were going to be a top four team. They're not very good right now. I'm not thoroughly impressed with their game against Oklahoma State, because Oklahoma State's not good. I'm not impressed with the drop off of Kyrell Luke and Darryl Banks, who have both been horrible to start the year. And I'm not sold completely on St. Joseph's for Billy Lang kind of running his own team into the wall with some of the adjustments that he makes. And I think the second one is their offense is so isolation reliant, and most of it is Eric Reynolds, get to the basket, do something. There's no team flow within that offensive system. And I don't mean to slash on Billy Lang, because he's a nice guy and he He's very personable. I liked him at Media Day last year. And Sam and KG, you guys, I'm sure, liked Billy Lang when you've talked to him in your encounters. But his coaching style and the adjustments that he makes, they're real head scratchers. So I feel like Duquesne has to get lucky and they have to get healthy at center, like really quickly. If we get to the middle of January, right? Like they're rolling, but Dayton's also really rolling. You know, you have to make sure your centers and your bigs are healthy by that time. And those are the two keys that if Duquesne wants to raise the trophy, those two things absolutely have to roll in their favor. Because if they don't, and they don't win with this team, let's try not to think about that.
So, no, a great point. It's kind of I'm sure that's not the answer that Duquesne fans wanted. Because I think what hurts the most, you know, if I'm putting myself in the shoes of a Duquesne fan, like what hurts the most about your analysis there shows it's that you're basically saying that Duquesne is not really in control of their own destiny. Again, you know, it's like you gotta just go out and think, you know, you're going out there to get the win every time. But at the same time, you know, it can be kind of tough when you're watching, you know, scores of another game to make sure that your team is benefiting from it. But we'll see. You know, it's still a very long season. Like, I feel like that's the whole point of a lot of these like early power rankings from us and like these early podcasts. It's like the data that we're going off of right now is so slim. Let's wrap up the men's side real quick. Still some MTE action later on this week. Still some MTE action tomorrow. What games do you feel like on the men's side do you guys think people should be checking out? Obviously, we talked about LaSalle Duke. We've got some other, you know, A-10 schools going up against some ranked opponents. St. Joe's is taking on Kentucky Monday night in the Wildcat Challenge. I think it's funny when a school hosts their own tournament that's just named after them. I mean, I guess Charleston does, right, in the Charleston Classic, but they didn't even compete.
They don't participate in it, which
they
is
don't participate.
Yeah. So I always thought that was really funny. But anyway, I digress. What other games do you feel like on the A-10 men's side you think people should be checking out? Starting off with you, Kaylee.
I got two. Outside of the two you just mentioned, St. Joe's versus Kentucky and LaSalle versus Duke, both of those are going to be very good ones to watch. I actually want to see how much playing time Trey Mitchell gets against Kentucky, just because he does have some A-10 background experience and Coach Cal may use that to his advantage. I just don't know how much you're going to see Trey Mitchell play that day, but that game's going to be a good one, as well as LaSalle versus Duke. I'm going to highlight Davidson versus St. Mary's. That's going to be a very, very intriguing game, just because St. Mary's is in the top of their towards the top of their conference. Davidson this year is kind of looking like they're going to be middle of the pack, maybe to top pillow fight. I am not going that far in saying that yet, but again, there's not enough data to really base everything that we're saying on this, because we're barely 2 weeks into the season. We don't know everything that's going to happen. So that one's going to be a very intriguing one, especially if my next team that I'm mentioning does play them in their – they could possibly end up playing them in their MTE in December. I'm going to mention UMass versus Central Connecticut State. I know while that isn't like necessarily going to be like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a close game, it's still a good game to watch, just because you can kind of see where these freshmen are going to be. And besides, UMass finally has Majuk back in their lineup after serving a 3-game suspension from the NCAA. So that is a really good sign to see. I know Coach Martin does want to experiment with having Cohen, Cross, and Hank and Sanford out there, all three of them out there at the same time, and see how much of a physical lineup that he can run with them. And I feel like he will really get a chance to experiment with it against Central Connecticut State, and that we can really get to see what a better idea of what this team is going to look like now that we have all the pieces back together for this Minutemen squad.
Ayala, what you got for us?
I'm rolling again with another shout out to my man, Tony Patelis. Duquesne versus Nebraska in the Cornhusker Classic. I want to see Keith Dambrot's air raid versus Fred Hoiberg's whatever Fred Hoiberg does out there in Nebraska. I do want to see how Duquesne looks against Power Six school. That being said, I know that everyone likes to make fun of Nebraska because they're just not good in the Big Ten. So they kind of, in a way, do resemble what a very good Atlantic 10 team would look like, a la Dayton. So this could be almost like a mirror type of matchup for the Dukes, but what they're going to see when we get to January, when we get to conference play, because Nebraska's got some bodies. They've got really good guards. So it could be a good preview of how Dayton, or Duquesne rather, could play in Atlantic 10 conference play, but it also could be a good chance for them to strengthen that resume that we have heralded on teams putting together to get at large bids in this conference.
Yeah, so really solid slate for the A-10 this week on the men's side. And let's get into some of the, some performances from the women and, some games upcoming this week on the women's side that are going to be really interesting. The first thing I want to get into is Rhode Island. Obviously, they were picked as the preseason favorite for the conference. And right now, they are 3-2. Again, a caveat to that, I feel like this 3-2 is not the worst 3-2 to be, being that their most recent loss was against number 14 NC State, 67-58. Their other loss being to the University of Maine, which, again, that's not the best loss. But me and KG were talking about this while we were just prepping for the show. A really weird schedule that Maine churned out this year. They are currently on a 3-game win streak, and all three of those teams are against A-10 teams. So LaSalle, UMass, Rhode Island, they've beat all consecutively. Their next game this Friday is against Richmond. And then on December 2nd, they're playing Fordham at Rose Hill. And then on December 20th, one of their last, their second to last non-conference game, Duquesne. So Maine somehow scheduled 6 Atlantic 10 teams in their non-conference schedule. I have never really seen that before. I know there's always one or two schools that every team in the conference will kind of share, like a very, very similar opponents. I know Harvard tends to play like multiple A-10 teams. Central Connecticut, I feel like, is a school that A-10 teams schedule a lot. But I've never seen 6.
So I will just first say this. You mean playing Richmond on Friday? That's actually an MTE out in Des Moines, Iowa, that Drake University is hosting. So that one is more of an MTE, but that second game you mentioned, or that last one you mentioned on December 20th, that one's actually another MTE. That one's being hosted by Tulane down in New Orleans. So honestly, it's kind of a little interesting. UMass does play UMass Lowell, but that one's always a traditional every single year kind of deal. And then Rhode Island also played UMass Lowell and also UMaine. But other than that, there's not many teams to my knowledge that are playing these America East teams. It's just UMass, Rhode Island, and then somehow we just sprinkled in Fordham, Richmond, and who was that last team you mentioned, Sam?
Duquesne.
Like, I've never seen this before in a A-10 schedule. I'll just say that now. This is a wild card. If UMaine somehow can manage to go undefeated against all these A-10 teams, I will be amazed. I was expecting the UMass loss to Maine to kind of be okay. Yeah, rebuilding, it makes sense. But Maine losing to Rhode Island? Maine beating Rhode Island, excuse me. That one I was not expecting. America East on the men's side is seen as a low major. And it is on the women's side as well. But honestly, that loss could kind of hurt the Rams a little bit when they come to an at-large bid. They have 3 very important games left in their conference schedule that that they need to kind of win. They also just need to win out the rest of their non-conference in order to kind of have a chance at an at-large bid. But beating Princeton, beating Harvard, and beating St. John's, those three games are going to be your keys to really having a good chance of being in the basically March Madness, because unfortunately, I've said this before and I'll say it again and I'll keep saying it, the NCAA selection committee for women's basketball and the March Madness is biased towards the Power 5, Power 6 team. So you don't see many mid-majors get two bids in. We were two-bid league when UMass and Dayton both made it in 2 years ago. We could have been a two-bid league last year, but UMass got put on the first four out. This year, it's really all up in the air. I couldn't even tell you right now who could be our automatic qualifier and who has a chance of being at large. I mean, Davidson is building up a great portfolio for being an at-large bid, considering they beat two ACC teams already and lost to one in a margin of 4 points.
Yeah. Those ACC teams being, excuse me. Yes. So those ACC teams being obviously Wake Forest and Duke. Davidson obviously 4-1 right now. But in terms of at-large bids, I mean, if we're just talking about teams that have just kind of run the gambit so far, I mean, you've got George Mason and St. Joe's both sitting at the top of the conference at 5-0 and 4-0 respectively. Obviously, you know, their schedules haven't been the most, stacked. George Mason's got a pretty good win against Pitt. And then St. Joe's, their best wins are probably, you know, Yale, Penn, Drexel. Do you see them potentially being an at-large team? I mean, what do you see, you know, in their schedule that could kind of propel them forward a bit more? I mean, obviously, Mason's got number 20 Maryland in about 2 weeks. I mean, how important is that game for the Patriots?
Honestly, I'm first going to go back to you mentioning Mason beating Pitt. That game was probably the game I was looking forward to watch all week this week. Nothing against Verdi and Pitt. I was trying to remain unbiased for the game just because Verdi, and I like to watch all of our non-conference games before we get into conference play for A-10. So I was kind of unbiased, and I was also rooting for the Bird to come back into the play after last year down at Eagle Bank Arena. Verdi had to chase a bird off the court. So I was kind of hoping the bird would be back for round two, but sorry, unfortunately there is no bird. But Mason did come out with a win, which does look good for the conference. May I just point out that was two ACC wins in 24 hours. Mason being that first win in that 24 hour span, and then Davidson beating Duke in that, other game in that 24-hour span. So that really right there does boost the A-10 up a little bit, considering we've beaten numerous. I've lost track of how many ACC teams we've beaten on the women's side. Typically, the ACC is typically a pretty stacked conference. I know UMass does play BC later on in the season. I know we have some other teams in the A-10 that still are going to be playing some ACC teams. So you could see an ACC A-10 matchup challenge coming. I don't know how to really describe it, but that's a huge thing. But Mason with Maryland, though, that's going to be a huge game. Granted, yes, the rest of their schedule is kind of just easy going. That's really their only biggest game, like in my eyes, that's going to be a huge game, is that Maryland game. And UMass has to face Maryland before Mason does, but I feel that Mason could go in and give them a bit of a challenge. It's going to depend on how this week really goes, because they do have two games in this next week before they do get a chance of playing Maryland. So basically we're looking at, we could see a 7-0 Mason team going into Maryland, or we could be seeing a 5-2, 6-1. I feel that we could be seeing, though, a 7-0 Mason team possibly going into this. And that will be a really great thing to see out of Mason, because Mason has not had this good of a start in a long time. Since before I even started following A-10 women's basketball as closely as I have. And then going on to the St. Joe side of this, St. Joe's is going to start getting battle tested in these upcoming weeks. St. Joe's has had a lighter schedule for these first few weeks, and that's what's made them had the ability to go 5-0 now in conference. So, or 4-0 in conference. It's either 4 or 5-0. But the ability that they're going that far in conference, or like not in conference, overall, is a really great thing. They are going to get battle tested though, when they do play Utah. They're going to be playing Villanova as well. So those two games right there, they're going to be very battle tested in those. If they could somehow split those two games, I would be impressed. But unfortunately, I don't. I want to have the faith that they can, because if they do, that just boosts the A-10 resume up even more for the chances of more teams getting an at-large bid into this very, very limited thing of our March Madness for women's. It would be awesome to see 2 to 3 teams get in, but unfortunately, we're one bid league every year, typically. We're lucky enough if we do get a 2-bid on the women's side, and maybe this year we can actually beat the men's team and get a 2-bid league in compared to the past years. But it'll honestly be a very interesting season for St. Joe's as well. It's really, you're going to expect the unexpected from any of these A-10 teams, just because there's not enough data really to get a good grasp on what these teams are going to look like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just goes back to what we've been saying, right? In the same way that we were talking about Duquesne, you have to capitalize. I mean, I think the A-10 on the women's side is in a really great spot this year, scheduling wise. They have a lot of real quality opponents, like you said, a lot of ACC schools, and so you have to capitalize on that. And that not only helps your team, it helps the entire conference. So I think there are some really good games this week on the women's side that can, you know, once again help the conference capitalize. So for you, KG, and for you, Thomas, let's start off with you, Thomas. What is the most important women's game on the A-10 side this week?
I feel like for the women's side, this game, in my opinion, is flying a little under the radar. As I always like to go to the big five games, Joe's versus Temple on Wednesday. That game, to me, is flying completely under the radar. And St. Joe's, they've been in this build up the last couple of seasons, and here we are in what I believe is the fourth year of that, and they've got a real squad this year, and I think they're going to go up against a Temple team that is always good, especially in big five games. And I think for them this will be a good test of their toughness, their mental togetherness, and that's what you want to see out of your team. And I think on the women's side, we see it less on the men's side, where they're all very ego and isolation and no, I'm that guy. The women's side, it's all about teamwork, working together and playing as one. And I think that Joe's has perfected that because they've been so good for all of those years. And I think that playing a local school where there's so much local, not animosity, but so much competition within it, and there's a lot of pride on the line, I think that's going to really raise the level of Joe's when they play the Owls. And I'm a firm believer that this Joe's team on the women's side is very, very good. This is the best team I think that they've had probably in, and Kaylee, correct me if I'm wrong, I would say the last 6 or 7 seasons might be the best team that they've had in a while.
I mean, you're basically correct. St. Joe's, they typically are a perennial team. So they typically are towards the top half of the conference every season. So you are 100% correct on that. Whether they're top 4 or something like that, it depends. But the past 4 years, they've had a really good team. And this year, they definitely do have title contention, just based off of what we've seen so far.
KG, what you got for us? What games are you watching?
I got a long list just because there's a lot of good games coming on. Yes, I am a little UMass biased, but UMass has a tough challenge this week. I will full on admit it is a rebuild season. I'm a little heartbroken over today's loss against Monmouth. Should have won that one, but I am not going to go into my very long tangent because I feel like if I do, it's just going to sound like it's a pointless tangent at this point. But
don't feel bad. I already did it on this podcast. Don't feel bad.
I know, but unfortunately, with still only 8 healthy players, this doesn't help my tangent much. And it's just starting out very slow. Like, it's nothing against, like, any of the players. It's just some reason it's just a very slow start every game. And the only time they haven't had a slow start out of the gate is in their one win. And only shooting, I believe it was, like, 33% from the field. And even, like, 20% from the three-point line. It kind of did kill the team a little bit today. And their rebounding also killed the team a little bit, too. But at the end of the day, you don't have all of your players available yet. You are still kind of like getting to the point where you're going to have the players back. They just officially announced that Ali Palmer, who's a 2-time transfer from BC and Seton Hall, is going to have to sit out this year, but is here for the ride to help rebuild this program. But just waiting on basically some players just to heal up from some injuries, should be back hopefully by December. This was their first game of a 6-game road trip. They play the next 3 down in Cancun, which are the 3 games that I have in my lovely list for this week. So, as you mentioned, Thomas, St. Joe's versus Temple. That one's going to be a good one just based off of the Big 5. I always like watching those games. I just watched the St. Joe's Drexel Power 5, the Big 5 matchup. I don't know how St. Joe's eked out of that one, but they did. With a win. So UMass plays against Green Bay, Washington State, and Maryland. The only game I see that they could possibly win is against Green Bay. But Green Bay did just beat Creighton, who was ranked. So this is kind of going to be we could get lucky. We can go 1-2 in this entire challenge and beat Green Bay, or we could go 0-3. Maryland is, again, one of the top perennial women's basketball teams. Washington State is coming off of Pac-12 conference championship from last season and is bringing back a lot of players. So I feel like UMass is definitely going to get battle tested in this in the Cancun Challenge for sure. But there's still some big games for just the A-10 in general. You also have Richmond versus Maine, as we mentioned. The America East just somehow meshing in more and more with our A-10 teams. This will be game 4 of 6 for Maine playing against some of our A-10 teams. If Maine goes 6-0 against our A-10 teams, I will be mind blown. Everything with that, and also Richmond versus Drake. Drake is another team that made it to the NCAA tournament last year, so that's going to be another great matchup as well. And VCU this year for the women's have kind of been a little bit more surprising than we thought. They've been doing a lot better than they thought, and they do have a game in the San Juan Puerto Rico shootout. I don't remember what the exact title is, but in an MTE against St. John's, against former UMass player Brenaya Mayo and former UMass assistant coach Candace Walker. So I feel that game could be a good matchup. St. John's did lose to Monmouth. I will just point that out. So it's going to be a great week in women's basketball and in men's basketball too. So it's, you never know what happens in college basketball.
I love that. It's going to be a really great slate. I think an important, this might be in terms of the non-conference, one of the most important weeks for A-10 basketball, which is kind of weird because I feel like college basketball kind of slows down a little bit right around Thanksgiving break. But again, not for the A-10 and not for A-10 Talk. So thank you again for listening to the A-10 Talk podcast. Make sure you keep checking us out. Follow us wherever you get your podcast. Spotify, Apple, wherever that may be. Make sure you keep checking out a10talk.com for updates on your favorite 15 teams on the men's and women's side of college basketball. Make sure you follow us at a10talk on Twitter. We got updates coming to you every single day, every single game. And so for Kaylee Godek, Thomas Aiello, I'm Sam Basil. This has been the A10 Talk podcast. And until then, we'll see you guys next time.